Good afternoon, and welcome everybody to our session here. We are going to be speaking, well, the title of this session is You Can Always Do It Better. I did not name that. You Can Always Do It Better, Novel Data Sources, Tools, and Methods. And we are going to hear from Annie Fine from the New York City Department of Health, who's going to be speaking about new tools for public health surveillance as applied to legionellosis outbreak detection and management. Here is Annie.
Thank you very much. So I'm happy to be here today. I'm assuming that a few more people might come, but everybody's probably out enjoying the sunshine or going through the Zika position statement, which I'm going to go run to after this. But thank you so much for coming. So what I'm going to talk about is how we're using a bunch of new tools that we put into place over the last few years and how they really paid off in our management of several outbreaks of Legionella in New York City over the past year. So what are these new tools? So some of them are actually not so new, like ELR. I mean, we began in New York State, as I'm sure Paula knows, implementing ELR back in 2006 and sort of in that period up to 2008, getting it really up and going. But at this point in New York City, we are completely reliant on the very complete and timely data that we get via ELR. I'm assuming everybody here knows, I mean, electronic laboratory reporting. And then we also, over the next 2011-2012, developed a Maven database system and an intermediary system through which we receive all of our electronic reports, whether they're lab reports or provider reports. They get processed automatically, standardized, mapped, and delivered to our surveillance systems. And the vast majority of our reports, which are on the order of about 1,500 reports per day, just into my communicable disease surveillance system, get processed automatically. A few require human manual manipulation. And then we have a powerful surveillance database system, which has workflow management, which enables automated assignment to investigators and prioritization of cases. And we have real-time geocoding. So when a report comes in, we use the patient address. It gets automatically sent out to the New York City geocoder and then returns the geocoded data elements back to our system. And so almost in real time, we have geocodable data. And then we also have integration with our public health laboratory information management system, which has been fully integrated with negative result reporting as well as non-reportable result reporting and reportable results, all implemented in the years between 2011 and 2013. And then most recently, we also enabled electronic delivery of molecular data from that system to our surveillance system. So all these things, as you can see, have been put into place over the course of the last 5 to 10 years. And then more recently, we also implemented a lot of automated analyses for cluster detection. So I'm going to explain these a little bit more, but they use the data that comes in automatically, but electronically, and they're run in an automated way too and deliver their output both to a number of disease matter, subject matter experts, as well as to all the surveillance leads for our program. So these include a refined historical limits method. So this is similar to the figure that you see in the MMWR, where it compares the incidence of disease in a certain time frame with the same time frame over the course of the previous years. And we do this at the citywide, borough, and neighborhood level. We do it weekly, and it takes that geographic area, it just counts up the number of cases in a four-week period, it compares it to similar four-week periods adjacent for the last 5 years. And then it just applies a simple statistical test and flags the case counts that are more than 2 standard deviations above a historical mean. But recently we adjusted this for a lot of issues related to surveillance data, which have to do with data lags, which have to do with secular trends. So diseases that are increasing, we would be likely to get too many signals if we didn't adjust for an increasing trend. Same thing with a decreasing trend. With an increasing trend, we'd be under-detecting outbreaks. With a decreasing trend, we would be over-detecting them. So we did a lot of work to refine it and make it more disease-specific. And so that's now run on a weekly basis. And then we do this other thing where we take that, what happens is when we send data to the New York City geocoder, it automatically assigns what's called a building identification number to a building, to any patient address. And then we take that unique number, and we know the same building and identification numbers for places like long-term care facilities or correctional facilities. So any congregate care facility, we match automatically that incoming bin with our known bins, and it sends an automated trigger if we have a match, for example, of a Legionella case in a long-term care facility, a flu case in a long-term care facility. And that's been going since about 2014. And then we also look for two instances of a reportable disease in a particular building, another thing that sends a signal for certain diseases. So that's been very useful. And then lastly, what I wanted to mention is our application of a prospective space-time permutation scan statistic called SatScan. And Sharon Green is the person who's really done the huge amount of work to implement this analysis and spoke about it yesterday at this meeting. And this is an automated daily analysis that's been run since early 2014. And it looks for clusters across space and time at any resolution of space or any resolution of time over the past year. And it requires only case data, and it accounts for purely spatial variations in disease occurrence and also purely temporal patterns like seasonality. And I'm not going to explain, I can explain it if you want, but that's not what I'm going to focus on. But this runs daily, and we put it into place for reportable diseases. We're one of the few jurisdictions, if any, that have ever tried to do this. And honestly, as Sharon's supervisor, I was like, well, this is a good idea, but I have no idea what it's really going to do for us. So what I'm, and then the last bit I wanted to mention is we also started to do case investigation using health information exchange, our regional health information organizations, in 2014. So we have access to these health information exchanges that aggregate data across facilities, and we're able to do case investigation right from our office by looking at them up on the computer. So that was something that we started to do to gain efficiency rather than having to send our staff to the hospital to get clinical information. And we also used the same SatScan technology that I just mentioned to prioritize cooling towers for inspection and sampling. I'm going to explain a little bit more about that. And then we also started doing things like network analysis using ArcGIS, looking at where patients went, mapping their probable routes, and looking to see what they had in common with those. So these are all kind of new methods that we were using, but they were put into place and we weren't sure how they were going to pay off. So the question I wanted to talk about today is, can these methods really have an impact on reducing morbidity and mortality due to an outbreak? And Legionella is a really prime example of a disease where I think they really do, and where the public health management of Legionella can be profoundly improved by the combination of methods like these. It's a disease with serious high morbidity and mortality, can cause point source outbreaks. These outbreaks can be explosive or they can be indolent, and it requires integration of data that is epidemiologic, laboratory, environmental, and most importantly, Legionella outbreaks are amenable to intervention at the source. You can remediate whatever the source of the outbreak is. The incubation period is about 2 to 14 days. For those of you who are not familiar with Legionella, I apologize if you are. It causes a flu-like syndrome with respiratory symptoms, but primarily pneumonia. It's diagnosed by a urine antigen test, but we really need sputum cultures in order to link the human infection to an environmental source. So we take the two cultures from both sources, we compare them by molecular techniques and see if they match. And it has a high case fatality rate, about 10%. It is treatable. And the primary source is exposure to contaminated aerosols from potable water or from environmental sources such as cooling towers or fountains. And you can have sporadic cases or you can have outbreaks. So the types of sources that we see are, it's present in the environment in many, many different places, and anywhere there's water. It can contaminate man-made water systems. And the community sources are generally cooling towers, which sit on top of buildings and are involved in the cooling of the building, and they use an evaporation system where the water from the building it becomes evaporated into the air. Misting systems, such as the ones you see in grocery stores, and then things like fountains. So what you see when you see these different types of exposures from potable water, you see people in the same building. And so that's why we do our two cases in one building. We look for that to find potential exposures within buildings. If you have a community source, you might see two people in one building, especially if it's a large building. But you're also likely to see people in close by buildings coming up with as cases. So those are the types of patterns we look for when we're looking for outbreaks. In New York City, we have about 200 to 300 cases. Uh-oh. Something happened. Okay. I'll just hold this.
Yeah,
that's weird. Did something get on my
actually,
glass?
This one detaches.
That's not on.
I think this is out, too.
I blew a fuse.
Can you project?
Can you hear me if I talk like that? Okay. I will shout. I'm known to be good at that. Okay. So we have about 200 to 300 cases per year of Legionnaires' disease in New York City. By the way, those of you in the back, feel free to move up if it's easier to hear. Come right up. So you can see the epidemiology of Legionella. We have seasonal increases every year, and it's just generally been on an upward trend, and this is true nationwide. Most of our cases are exposed to many potential sources, so it's not easy for us to link an individual case to any kind of exposure because we have no idea where they got exposed. So I'm going to talk about three recent outbreaks in New York City where having these systems that I just talked about in place really made a difference. So this is all three outbreaks occurred in the Bronx. The Bronx is one of the five boroughs of New York City, and this is an aerial photo of the Bronx, and you can see this is an incredibly densely populated area. It's mostly huge apartment buildings, lots of people, and it's this area that that's called the South Bronx, but this whole borough is called the Bronx. The Bronx has generally had very high rates of Legionella. We're never sure exactly why, but this is data from the past 5 years, and this is the Bronx, and you can see that the rates of Legionella in the Bronx have historically been high. Keep going? Okay, can you still hear me? Am I talking loud enough? Okay. Okay, the Bronx has also not just a very dense population, but a very high... I'm glad I'm not nervous. it's pretty funny, actually. Okay, so we have a very high population, a very high percent of poverty, very high poverty, especially the South Bronx. Also, this is people who went without needed medical care, so we have poor healthcare access in the Bronx. We have a lot of current smokers, and we have a high proportion of people with diabetes, which is an underlying risk factor for severe legionellosis. We also have, in the Bronx, a lot of cooling towers. So this is the number of cooling towers we have in New York City. As you can see, in the highest quintile, we have between 31 and 850 cooling towers per square mile. The Bronx is mostly in the 10 to 31, but you can imagine if you have a collection of cases and you have that many cooling towers, it can be very hard to figure out which cooling tower is your smoking cooling tower. So the first outbreak I'm going to talk about is Co-op City, and this one, the way we found out about this outbreak was that we had a Legionella signal on our routine analysis. At this point, we were not running SAT scan. We were running this historical limits analysis, and the first thing that happened was it signaled, and it told us that there were 9 cases in the Bronx. It looked at the whole borough, and this is an example of the automated output that we get from our system. This happens on a weekly basis, and it just said, boom, there's something going on in the Bronx. So we investigated, and we looked around, and we found that several of the patients in this signal actually lived in the same housing complex. They didn't live in the same building, but they did live in the same housing complex, and that was called Co-op City. It's the largest housing complex in the United States. There are 60,000 residents in this area over a small 330 acres with more than 15,000 residential units, and this historical unit limits method signaled on December 1st. Then what turned out, it was actually one of these very indolent outbreaks. It wasn't an explosive outbreak. There was one case, and there was another case. So there really wasn't a very easy way for us to pick this up. So we were lucky that this historical limits method signaled. But we weren't sure what was going on because we only had two cases residing in this housing complex. But then on December 30th, the building signaled, and we found two cases in one Co-op City building. So at that point, we went out, we sent our team out, and sure enough, they saw that there was this power plant that was very close to Co-op City that had five cooling towers on it. And they sampled those cooling towers, and five out of the five cooling towers were PCR positive for Legionella pneumophila 1, which is the type that causes most human disease. And so that cooling tower, that power plant was actually ordered to be shut down. We were able to collect cultures on some of those patients, and it turned out that we had eight cases over those 2 months when we looked back, and the single patient who had a culture did match the exact isolate that came from this power plant. So once that power plant was shut down, it was remediated, and there were no further cases after that. The second outbreak I'm going to talk about happened in the South Bronx, and this was one that received a lot of publicity. So what happened with this outbreak was that on July 17th, this was this past summer, a SAT scan analysis, which we had put into place, signaled, and it said that we had eight cases over the course of the previous 8 days, mostly centered in the South Bronx. And this is the output, automated output, that we get from that analysis. And this had not happened before. So it happened that was on a Friday, and on the following Monday, independently, that we started to receive calls in our office, and people started to notice that there was an increase in cases getting reported from this area as well, and the investigation began. On the following day, a hospital called us and said, hey, we're seeing a lot more urine antigens. And then the following days, more hospitals called. And then not until 10 days later did the historical limits method signal. So we did an investigation, and we found that no common buildings were visited by the patients. The case residents were actually fairly spread out over about seven zip codes. And so we thought outdoor dissemination was the most likely exposure. But again, which cooling tower was the most likely source? And in this area, there were about 40 cooling towers. And we sent out teams to sample, but the teams can't sample 40 cooling towers in one day. They have to prioritize. So we had to help them try and figure out which ones to prioritize. There were multiple positives for Legionella pneumophila 1. We also put out the word to collect specimens from as many patients as possible, and each day now we were getting more and more cases. So as a result of this effort, there were 42 cooling towers which were screened, and 14 of them were positive for Legionella pneumophila 1 by PCR. Six of them were culture positive, and then we took the culture positive ones and we compared them to, we got 26 isolates from patients, and there were two, at the beginning there was just one, but there were two cooling towers that had the human strain. Later on, we were able to figure out which of those two cooling towers actually did cause the outbreak, and I'm going to show you how. And these were the two. So these are not real spot map of the human cases. The points have been moved around. But the green dots are the human cases, and these are all cooling towers. So we used a test called the SATSCAN multifocus cluster test. So basically, this is a little different. You take every cooling tower that you know about in the entire city, and you do the space-time permutation scan statistic to figure out, of the human cases that exist, which cooling tower explains most of those cases. And we use that to figure out that cooling tower A explained more of the cases than cooling tower B. So cooling tower A, we had 138 cases, and the largest cluster was 56 explained by cooling tower A. And the recurrence interval is how likely this is to occur again, how much time it would take for it to occur again if it were one more time, and it would take 1.36 million years. So this was highly significant, and this was a hotel that was we think was responsible for this very large outbreak. So we had 138 cases. That was the second largest Legionnaires outbreak that has ever been reported in this country. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the timing. So the The dark blue is the onset date for the patient. The light blue is when we get the actual reports. So there's built-in lags. Whenever you're dealing with an infectious disease, you have the time the person was exposed, then you, that there's 2 to 14 days until that person develops symptoms. The dark blue here reflects the symptom development, and then that person has to go to seek medical care, and then they have to be diagnosed, and then that has to get reported to the health department. So we're kind of like always running behind here. So what happened in this case was our first onset date was July 8th, and you can see this light blue was how many cases we actually even had just reported to our system by the time our SAT scan signaled. So we felt when this happened, and we knew this outbreak was happening, and SAT scan had picked it up this early, I felt like this was a major success. Other people didn't think that, but that's okay. That's fine. We know that this is a highly sensitive method for detection of a Legionella outbreak. And then our investigation was launched, and it took a while to do the sampling to get the positive results, and this is when the cooling tower was remediated. This outbreak was already waning by the time that cooling tower was remediated, but we don't know how long it would have gone on indefinitely into the future if it had not been remediated. But of course, this is what I mean. The Bronx is furious over the city's slow response to Legionnaires. So we're always dealing with that, and we always can do better. But I think we are obligated to do the best we can to detect and respond as quickly as possible in a situation like this. One other things we can do besides remediating the cooling tower, we can also give messages out. We know more people are going to get sick. We know more people were exposed. So we can say, if you do get sick, seek medical care as soon as possible. Go to the hospital, get your diagnosis, and get your treatment. And we knew that that was taking a long time in the Bronx. So a good thing we found was that before we announced that the outbreak existed, it was taking people 5 days to get from onset of symptoms to diagnosis, and after that, it was taking 1 day. So we had a big impact from just announcing that the outbreak was happening on getting people to care quickly and getting them the treatment they needed, which I'm sure also mitigated the morbidity associated with this outbreak. And then the last outbreak I'm going to talk about happened in the East Bronx. And amazingly, we just finished the Legionella outbreak in August. And we're like, phew, finally got that one done. But September, we had another one. So this one, the way this one was recognized was an astute epidemiologist in our office who receives all the cases for a particular area of the city noticed that there were 3 cases associated with a very small area in the Bronx. One was a resident of a group home, so they had an address in the area where this was. But 2 others were work addresses. They were people who worked in that area, and there was no way we would detect that with our automated geocoding because we didn't geocode work address. But there were more cases around that, and then 2 days later, SAT scan signaled and told us about this outbreak that we already knew about. And so for this outbreak, it was, again, in a very dense area with 50 cooling towers. Again, we used that SAT scan multi-focus cluster test to prioritize which cooling towers. We told our environmental team to go out and sample first, and Legionella pneumophila was grown from one of the towers. It matched 4 patient isolates, and that was remediated on 9/29. So 4 days from the time that it was noticed, 2 days from the SAT scan signal to when that tower was remediated. This outbreak caused 15 cases and 1 death, and now we do incorporate work address into our SAT scan. So we're able to, it relies on the investigation getting assigned to an investigator calling that patient, getting their work address, putting it into our system, and now gets geocoded as soon as it's put in there. And now we can use that in our SAT scan analyses as well. We're also exploring new other analyses. I don't know how they will pay off. We're looking at things like proximity analyses. So we're looking at certain number of cases within a small area, and we're using the geocoded data to calculate. And so we're looking for threesomes. If we find a triangle of cases, we will respond to that. And that is running daily. We also are using our, the way I mentioned, using the health information exchange data. We're also querying the health information exchange data to be able to look at trends over time. So we're looking at tests for Legionella in 3 hospitals covered by one of our health information exchanges, and the dotted red line is the percent positive. So we can see, are they ordering tests? Are they not ordering tests? Because you really have to order the tests in order to diagnose the disease. And then lastly, we're using our syndromic data, where these were syndromic emergency department admissions just for things like chest pain, cough and fever, and we use that to also follow the outbreak. So these are other methods that we're using, but they weren't the main methods for diagnosing and managing this outbreak. So in terms of these three outbreaks, all the tools that were used, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of electronic laboratory reporting. It is not automatic that it happens. It requires support. It requires infrastructure. And this will be true for electronic case reporting as well. So informatics is not always the sexiest thing. We're sort of the plumbers. We're the ones that make all the data flow. And then the analytics. You know, we're the ones that analyze all that data. It's not as sexy as having the study and showing your p-value. But it is absolutely critical to providing the data to be able to do that. And that's why I find this exciting, I'm just going to say. So ELR is critical. Having astute epis are critical. So this is what method was the first and any method to diagnose any of these outbreaks. So you can see you have a need for redundancy. Multiple methods were used to find each of these outbreaks. The first method was historical limits, SAT scan, and an astute epidemiologist. You cannot just rely on one. Every type of outbreak, every disease will present different challenges. Also, we use these other techniques I mentioned too, case investigation using the HIE, our surveillance database, which we were able to flexibly add new questions. We could ask people, did you spend time in the outbreak zone? We did that rapidly using our database. And we also used the transmission of key laboratory results, molecular data from our public health laboratory to our surveillance system to be able to match up patients with cooling towers. So in summary, I do believe all this has led to more rapid and effective detection and response to outbreaks. And I basically covered all of this, so I'm just going to skip it. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody. There are so many people who work together to make all of this happen. I couldn't single anybody out, but it's people in communicable disease, our public health laboratory, our informatics bureau, and our environmental health colleagues. So I wanted to thank everybody very much. And I'm happy if there's time.
Would you like to do questions?
I can do a few questions now.
If anyone has any questions, please speak up. We don't have a PA system at the moment, but we'll be working on the PA system while we're doing questions. If you want to step down or something.
Step down?
Yeah,
and okay.
Let him work on it.
Okay.
Anytime. We'll make this more informal.
I apologize.
Yeah. Thank you.
Audible.
There's some thoughts that Legionella might be transmitted. All right, raise the roof. Okay. Greg Dallow, Lord Carver Health. Legionella might be transmitted from towers after they've been idle for a while, dormant, and then
yeah.
They fired up.
That's
true.
That
the case?
It was not the case for any of these. I don't believe that East Fox might have been one. The East Fox was a relatively new cooling tower. And so was the one for the South Bronx, relatively new, but they weren't just recently fired up. However, as a result of especially this large outbreak in the South Bronx, New York City has implemented a cooling tower registration system, as you may know. So now all cooling towers are required to be registered in the city, and we are going to be inspecting all of them on a regular basis and gathering data. So this is going to give us an opportunity to better understand what are the factors in cooling towers that can lead to outbreaks. It's still going to be tough to associate that with sporadic cases. We can look at peak incidents around cooling towers, but because we have so many, it's hard to associate individual cases with particular cooling towers. But we are going to be trying to look at cooling tower factors that are associated with higher incidence and outbreaks of disease, and turning them on suddenly if they've been off is one of the things people mentioned. They also mentioned the size of the cooling tower, the height of the cooling tower off the ground, certain different methods for